Bear Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me Cece, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, who's never organized, Denise.
Oh, snap. How you going to throw shade in the introduction?
Because it's not my fault, fans and listeners, that we didn't have a podcast last week.
Right. I was on an island. I was on a boat, and it was going fast, and...
Let's just be acting unavailable. Not dedicated to the cause. So I know that it has nothing to do with blackness and queerness and truthness, but can we just talk about the breakup of Brangelina real quick? Just like real quick, like.
Okay.
Just real quick, like.
Hey. I mean, like one angle. So, you know, who's that comedian? Chelsea? She's, I don't like her. The one that used to date 50 Cent.
Yeah, that's Chelsea.
Oh, she's a mess. She was coming at it like saying that Brad needed to get drunk because there's some reports of him being drunk and doing some disorderly conduct on a tarmac and all kinds of craziness because he was living with 85 kids speaking 15 different languages.
Wow, she did not say that.
And she said that's because, you know, Angelina Jolie is a lunatic. Now, let me tell you something.
She's being real shady.
She's being beyond shady. And everybody know her. She don't like kids like that.
Right. She doesn't like kids.
It's cool. Not everybody gotta like kids. I get it. But the angle that she takes about like the diversity of that family being inherently insane is something that I take issue with. She's just a mess.
Yeah, but this is someone who dated 50 Cent.
Right.
And had all kinds of racist nonsense coming out of her mouth. And she was like, I can't be racist. I date black dudes.
So. Okay.
But you know, the New York Post was shady as what? They put on their front page a picture of Jennifer Aniston laughing, like in just pure joy. And it says Brangelina 2004 to 2016. Why is there so much schadenfreude about this couple breaking up? I think it's horrible. People need to stop.
Well, people are projecting that on Jennifer Aniston as if her life hasn't gone on. Right. Like, I can't remember the dude I was married to 20 years ago. Come on, man. Like, I'm concerned about what he do with his doo-doo. I don't care.
But, you know, Brad Pitt is apparently, word on the street is, he is under investigation by the FBI for child abuse. Because, you know, she issued a statement. Angelina Jolie issued a statement because everybody was like, oh, you know, Brad must have had an affair with old girl on the set, whatever, whatever. And Angelina was like, this is not about a third person. This is about differences and how we have a vision of raising our children. He also smokes a lot of weed and is friends with her dad, who she doesn't even like.
Right.
John Boyd. So, okay, I had to talk about it a little bit. She doesn't want to act anymore. She just wants to do her human rights thing. You know, Brad is 100% team acting. So,
and they made that horrible movie together.
Which one? Mr. and Mrs. Smith?
Nah. They made a recent movie that she like wrote and directed. And it's all about a couple like going like anguish and just being like, I hate you. Why are we together?
I did not watch that.
Don't watch it. That's why they're not together anymore. They made that horrible movie together.
Why do couples keep doing this? This is exactly what happened between Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise. They made Eyes Wide Shut, and then they got a divorce.
Because eyes need to be wide open, bitches. Y'all in Hollywood. Coming for your spots.
I'm going to deliver you a little nugget today. So what was the big news coming from the person I love and the person you hate, The Weeknd?
Ooh, he cut off his lock. I know. He put it down.
He cut it off. Indeed, he did. And the funny thing is, I follow him on Instagram, of course. I saw the post, and I do my Instagram mostly just like right when I wake up. And I didn't even see it. I was like, oh, he's got a new album coming out. Yes, dope. And it wasn't until I saw the post from Love B. Scott that I was like, oh, wait, hold up.
He ain't got his lock no more.
Oh.
He was probably keeping drugs and that shit. Like, look, I got locks myself. But that was a definite decoy lock. That lock, never trusted it. You can put your keys in your lock too thick.
Wow. That hate on him so hard. It is just...
How you gonna have one lock?
A mess. In other grand news of pop culture this week, the Emmys took place. The Emmys are, you know, the big awards show for television. basically.
Right.
They took place on Sunday. And of course, everybody was hyped because one of my favorite shows, Black-ish, I ride hard for Black-ish. Black-ish lead actress Tracee Ellis Ross was the first Black woman in 30 years to be nominated for Outstanding Leading Actress in a Comedy for her character Rainbow Bow on Black-ish. The last person to be nominated was Felicia Rashad in 1986 for her role as Claire Huxtable on The Cosby Show. Love me some Felicia.
And like Living Single never made it? Like they couldn't? Okay, I get it.
The Emmys are very white. So,
like, they couldn't even nominate Marge from The Simpsons. Everybody knows she's Black. Everybody know Marge is Black as shit, man. Everybody know. She orange, but she Black.
Okay.
Look at that hair. Look at that hair. Look at that hair. She wrap it up at night, too.
A mess. Go ahead. It felt like a no-brainer. I mean, Amy Schumer was nominated, but her show was like on hiatus. The show is crappy. Lily Tomlin was nominated for Grace and Frankie.
You said Schumer's show is crappy. Back it up, rewind.
It's on hiatus, so it must not be doing much. But it went to someone who won in the past. Don't get me wrong, she's a great actress, but I don't see it. Julia Louis-Dreyfus won for Veep. Now, Veep is a big hit, and it does rack up quite a few Emmys. I'm disappointed. It should have gone to Tracy. It was Tracy's award. It was her time. She was decked out in just the best. Like, everybody came for her. All the designers. Specially designed the dress, the jewelry, the hair. The face was simple. I mean, why? It was not only a bad night. Regina King, who I've mentioned on the show before, she won for the second year in a row, actually. And I told y'all not to sleep on Regina. Like, she has come so far since the days of 227. Who knew? Oh, yeah. Who knew that she was going to be like this amazing TV director? How many voices did she do for Boondocks? How many voices?
Girl, you got the whole CV on Regina, don't you? Goodness, you her agent? What's going on?
You didn't know she did the little boy's characters?
She did
all of those voices. Yes.
Okay. Her and Cree Summer. You're doing them cartoon voices. Cree Summer probably put her on.
Who else should I mention? Oh, yes. We did have like a big win. Rami Malek, who is an Egyptian-American, he won for Mr. Robot. And apparently he is the first Egyptian-American to win an Emmy. So there was some history being made for brown and Black people. But Tracy.
I didn't know he went white. I didn't know he went white. But now I know. Now I know.
You really didn't know?
I didn't. Now, I got into Mr. Robot in Guyana. When I went to Guyana, and I was in a hotel with three channels.
Wow.
Mr. Robot Marathon was on, and I was like, this is dope. I absolutely co-signed Mr. Robot first season. I don't know what the second season was doing, but the first season was dope. He carried it. He holds a scene. All of the things are happening with him. Just didn't know he went away. But now I know.
Now you know. Mm-hmm. I would like to also mention that Outstanding Lead Actor in a Comedy, who was nominated? Aziz Ansari for Master of None. Now, I haven't watched it yet, but everybody thinks of me when they watch the show, because at least five different people have been like, do you watch this show? Now, I'm a fan of Aziz sometimes, but his stuff be borderline anti-Black as well.
No more free, Randy. Yes. Yes. But but the thing is that like the show is a very good first season. It is not. It doesn't do that extra thing.
Okay.
Like, I could see Mr. Robot getting something where Aziz Ansari did not.
Okay.
Just because it's like some of the things you could tell that it just needed just a little bit more, you know, seasoning.
Different category. We're in lead actor in a comedy. Aziz was up against. It needed
more refinement is what I'm saying.
Aziz was up against who I was rooting for. Anthony Anderson. Again, lead character, Black-ish. And Black-ish, as far as I know, went home empty-handed. They didn't win anything.
Of course they didn't win anything.
Who did win Outstanding Lead Actor in a Comedy? Jeffrey Tambor for Transparent.
That made me want to sing a Negro spiritual right there. I don't know why, but like my ancestors were talking to me in that moment. And it's really about like, look, I think Transparent is great. And I love that Jeffrey got up there and said, I want to be the last man to play a transgendered woman. I think that Hollywood needs to give trans actors a chance. And I'm glad that he said that, but you still a man playing a trans woman. I get it.
Okay, but no. We're going to have to talk about this for a second.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's get into it.
Why is this an issue for
so... Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. I just came out. Go ahead.
Okay. Why is this an issue? Like, I really need to understand, because I think it is a lot to ask of someone. Laverne Cox does not play her pre-transition self. Her twin brother plays her pre-transition self. Let's be really clear. And if you've watched both seasons of Transparent, you will know that there's a lot of going back and forth in time, showing his character pre-transition and where the character is now.
Mm-hmm.
Are there trans actors who want to do that?
Yeah, I think that's why there are actresses and actors. Yes, I think that there are actors that want to do that, and they want to be given the chance to do that.
Mm-hmm. There's a reason that Laverne Cox's twin brother plays her character, Sophia, pre-transition.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, I can't speak. I'm not a trans person. I can't speak for that community in the sense of like knowing what they want. I know that there is definitely this feeling that a trans woman cannot play a trans woman in Hollywood. That happens often.
I can think of maybe that where they were playing trans characters and not some cross-dressing or something else type of character. I can think of maybe three films. And yes, that is very true. They weren't played by trans people. Mm-hmm. But what do people expect when they change like the whole race of characters? Make them white when they're... Or don't even make them white. They just let white people wear... They just let white people play the character. They don't even make them white.
They the gods of Egypt. They Michael Jackson. They gonna be boys in the hood soon. They're gonna be in the remake of Juice. Brad Pitt.
Stop, girl.
Yes, girl. You know it. Eminem.
Please don't make. If Eminem did some shit like that, he would lose all little bit of credibility he has left.
I could totally see it. But look, and so in that sense, the way that Black people have had historic underrepresentation in Hollywood, I totally feel for trans people not being it, like when they have this like one in 100 character that is one in 100 of characters in movies, films, what have you, are actually trans people that are not the butt of jokes, right? In that sense, right? And probably less, right? You know, I mean, to be real. Mm-hmm. And so you got that 1 in 1,000 character, and you're going to give it to someone who does not have a trans experience, man. Nah, man. Nah, that sucks. Like, meanwhile, you in Hollywood in California trying to make it as a trans actress, waiting tables, or, you know, struggling financially because nobody will give you a chance. That's a problem.
It is a problem. But I do recall when we were at the Berlin International Film Festival one year, and we watched all the queer movies that existed on the program.
Mm-hmm.
And there was the one Australian film, 54 Nights or something it was called, 54 Tuesdays.
Yeah, that was dope.
And I recall in the Q&A that they did talk about the challenges of playing that role with what it brings up for the actor playing it. So I don't know.
I think it's in all like really deep roles, actors go through shit.
Of course.
You think, you know, what's her name? Charlize Theron didn't go through shit playing in Monster? Ooh. You know what I mean? Right? Mm. Let's be real now.
I'm not advocating for trans people not to play trans roles. All I'm saying is if every trans person is different, I think it would be very hard to speak for all trans people and what would be right for any given character.
Of course, every Black person is also different. That doesn't mean that they should.
But I can still tell every white dude, don't think about touching a Black woman's hair. Your hand might get hacked. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying there are certain rules that just you want those to be across the board, universal truths. And I don't know that we could do that when it comes to.
Well, I think one rule that isn't across the board universal truth for Asian actors, which are horribly underrepresented,
mm-hmm.
for Black actors, trans actors, gender diverging actors, that the problem is underrepresentation. Yeah, there are diverse group of folks. Not everyone is the same. Not everyone will say yes to the same role. But goodness gracious, give them a chance. Give them an audition.
Okay. In our second segment, I'm really going to try not to laugh
Ooh.
But I'm not really trying to cry. So I might find myself laughing because I got to get through the pain. And I'm being very serious right now. Okay. I am actually being serious. This week has just been disgusting. And I also ask myself, how does it continue to happen that it's just like a flood of trauma to the Black body within a certain time frame? So just earlier this year, we had the flood when Alton Sterling and Philando Castile were killed. And now we've had a week that, let me just go through them very briefly. We had the week where we were witness to Terrence Crutcher being killed by Tulsa police with his hands in the air, simply because his car had broken down and was in the middle of the street. Now, granted, we don't know everything that happened, but what we do know is police in helicopters were like, yeah, that's one big Black scary dude. And a white woman got scared and shot him.
Right.
If you want to know how that's happening, she has actually been charged for first degree manslaughter. The district attorney.
Like, I wish I could shoot somebody in broad daylight with their hands up and get charged for some fucking manslaughter. Get the hell out of here with that bullshit.
Okay, well, every state is different. The argument that the district attorney gave for manslaughter is manslaughter in the state of Oklahoma is defined as when you have high emotions, and those emotions may be fear or anger.
Fuck her emotions. White women and their emotions. Isn't this what we was talking about last week with Lena Dunham? They can't police their imagination, yet they want to come in and police our communities. That's what's the problem.
Of course. Absolutely. Federal prosecutors and FBI agents are also conducting a separate investigation into whether Mr. Crutcher's civil rights were violated.
They could cut and paste from the last motherfucking investigation. How about that?
Indeed. I will say, even though manslaughter is not enough, it should be a first degree murder charge. I'm happy to see a charge this quickly. I'm happy to see that Tulsa Police Commissioner released the video, that in the swiftness that they did it, and making the charge and now negotiating her turning herself in. You can make the face all you want, but let's look at the history just through the last 365 days, how often that happened.
This has given me, this whole situation is giving me Baltimore vibes. You remember, let's rewind Tuesday.
It wasn't the same in Baltimore, though.
I understand it wasn't the same in Baltimore. We're talking about the Freddie Gray situation. So we had a very dedicated prosecutor who was woke as fuck. You know, I mean, you couldn't ask for a better prosecutor than this woman.
Mm-hmm.
She was elected by the community, woke, ready, able to prosecute the police.
Mm-hmm. But what did you have in that case? You had a case of how many people involved in covering it up,
not happening here?
First of all, like I said, the video was released immediately. I didn't say nothing cover up happening. What I'm saying is it's not completely comparable. The video was released immediately. The city of Tulsa, the mayor, the police commissioner, everyone came out with really clear words. And she's been charged within days of it happening. Whereas in Baltimore, you had a group of people responsible for the death and another group of people helping that group of people cover it up at every stage, at every turn. And that is the difference. No one has her back. They're going to let her fall on this one. Tulsa's like, we're not trying to have riots. There's no reason to believe that she won't be convicted. There have been convictions. We don't know. What I do know is in all of the rage and all of the anger, we do have to say sometimes, okay, well, something happened here. It is right that the video was released.
Even when there are convictions, there is a very low likelihood of jail time for police officers that commit these crimes.
In Oklahoma, you can serve no less than 4 years if you were convicted of manslaughter. That is state legislation.
My sixth Black sense is telling me that what's going on here is the beginnings of here's a little hope, darkies. And
I
then
don't think it has anything to do with here's a little hope, darkies. Walter Scott's murderer was charged first degree murder in a very southern state.
In South Carolina.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Nobody was worried about Black folks. They were like, the video is clear. This dude is getting charged.
Right. There was a civilian video of that incident, and he did start the cover up. What I'm saying is that they found a vial of PCP, which I don't believe actually this man had PCP. I mean, like, who does PCP anymore? Okay. And how
PCP is odd. But his behavior was also odd. So I'm not sure what was happening.
His behavior went odd to me. At what point
a large Black man with a police helicopter above him and more police coming on the ground. And he's not listening to what they're saying.
Who said he wasn't listening to what they're saying? Because I couldn't hear what they were saying. What she said in her statement was that I was just trying to help and take care of this car. I asked him to take his hands out of his pockets and he took them out of his pockets and raised that in the air. And I felt that was strange. He went above and beyond what you asked him to do. Not only he said, okay, like if you worried about my pockets, I don't even need to have my hands anywhere near my body. Mm-hmm. And are you shooting him for that nonsense? And then he took some cool moldy steps.
You said cool moldy. Okay.
He took some measured calm, like he must have been in a meditative state, taking them steps back to his. I couldn't do that sober. I definitely couldn't have done that.
I don't believe he was on PCP. I just wonder why he took the steps. And I'm not saying this has anything to do with his getting shot, and I'm not making any claims or compromises, but I do ask myself, why did he walk away?
I felt very strongly that what was going through his head at that time was like, okay, I'm out here with a disabled vehicle. You pulling a gun on me.
Right.
You automatically treating me like a terrorist. Let me go put my hands on a car and assume the motherfucking spread eagle position.
Right.
That's what I understand because I know from being in the hood and seeing that happen all the time, you got two options.
Right.
Get on the pavement of the highway.
Right.
Right. Or you get on your car. You know, I'm assuming that for an older dude, it's much more comfortable for you to just get in your car, get on the car, and then your ID and everything is in your car and you could direct the police to where it is. But you ain't doing nothing illegal. You're talking about in Oklahoma, even an open carry state, like even if he had a gun in his waistband, he wouldn't have been doing anything illegal.
Well, it's never about if we're doing something illegal, is it? Since you are against the whole indictment and
whatnot, I'm not against it. I just think that it's political theater.
I don't think it's political theater. I don't believe it because it doesn't happen enough for it to be political theater. A shooting that happened in 2011 in St. Louis, where officers Jason Stockley and his partner Brian Bianchi engaged a drug suspect, Anthony Lamar Smith, in a high-speed chase. Video was released. Camera footage was released. It has emerged that the officer Stockley can be heard saying, I'm going to kill this motherfucker. And then he kills him and then returns to the vehicle to plant a gun on him. Funny story. He planted a gun on him without bothering to put any fingerprints on that gun. Mm-hmm. So investigators were always like, well, if this is his gun, why are there no fingerprints on it?
And your prints are on it. Your prints are
on it. And no DNA. So he is now being tried for first degree murder.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. I'm just saying, I know way more story. Like, I have to search the annals of my brain to figure out a story where not only was the cop charged, not only was he found guilty, but then went on to serve jail time. This situation with Walter Scott in South Carolina might be one of the first times where I have real, real solid, based on evidence, hope that that would happen. Like, for them to get out of this one would be really hard.
Well, but the thing is, you're talking about Oklahoma. What else happened in Oklahoma?
It's 50 states. It's too many stories for me to have a
doc. We've talked about it on the show.
Okay, so what else has happened in Oklahoma? Please jog my memory.
No, you should know this.
Okay, what else happened in Oklahoma? I'm sorry.
Really?
I'm sorry. You remind me of one of my grade school teachers. I just, like when people do this to me, I just freeze up. I'm just like, I don't know.
Daniel Ken Holtzclaw, a former Oklahoma City Police Department police officer.
Right.
Was charged in sexually assaulting 13 women and convicted of sexually assaulting 8 of them.
Right.
So I don't believe that it's political theater. I believe that there are people out there who have their eyes open. Maybe not everybody.
Yeah. So if you rape over 50 women, 13 of them come forward to say something, then maybe you'll get convicted of about 8.
Really?
Mm-hmm. You're talking about a serial rapist who got sloppy. It was like one of those scenes in Dexter where, you know, the serial killer just wants to get caught.
How many rapists get caught? Or
I understand, but convicted? Daniel, I get that. And Daniel Holtzclaw started getting, like, at first he was a little slick, but towards the end day, he was just super sloppy. They had all kinds of evidence on him.
If you're not willing to acknowledge a win when there's a win, even if it doesn't change the system, then what do you want?
A change in the system?
Yeah, we all want a change in the system, but we can at least acknowledge when something does go right.
Yeah, I'm glad that he's in prison. We also should note that they have kept him in protective custody. Even the families that are affected by his rape don't even know where he is in prison because, you know, his security is somehow paramount over the assurance that their rapist is in prison. I mean, like, there's all kinds of other stuff is happening. So sorry if I don't get, like, overjoyed about the fact
that... I didn't tell you to get overjoyed, but you can acknowledge the fact that somebody has gone to jail, that somebody else has been charged with first-degree manslaughter. Whether it's the right charge, yeah, we can be mad about it, but to be like, oh, that doesn't matter, that's not the case, and that's really unfair to the family to be like, that doesn't matter at all.
Well, what I'm not saying, I never said it doesn't matter. I'm just saying
it basically doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything when you look at the sum of basically how they have to kill you in order to be, for your life to have any legal significance, or how they have to assault you for your life to have any legal significance. In the case of Daniel Holtzclaw, he not only has to assault you, he got to assault your mama, your daughter, your cousin, and them too. Like, all of y'all got to get assaulted. Come together on it.
I think that's unfair because you know how it works with sexual assault, and you know how very difficult it is for survivors to come forward on that.
I don't think
it's fair to call that a system thing, whereas it's up to the survivors to come forward on it, right? Protesters took to the streets in Charlotte, North Carolina on Tuesday night, clashing with the police after the fatal police shooting of a Black man earlier in the day. Keith Scott, 43, was shot and killed by Charlotte Mecklenburg officer Brentley Vinson, who is also Black, after being mistaken for a wanted man. So why are people on the streets if a Black man killed a Black man?
Because that's not what eyewitnesses say. The eyewitnesses say a white cop killed this man.
So why is the Black man going down for it?
Because, you know, KRS-One, Black cop, that's what they do. Stand on this corner and take these bullets. That's what they do.
So what are eyewitnesses saying? That his partner did it?
Eyewitnesses are, I don't know who partnered with who, but they just saying like, look, I was there. Uh-huh. Dude was in the car and minding his own business. You know, people have a right to be in a car waiting for their kids to come home from school, reading a book, whatever. The cops rolled up on him like, you know, he was wanted, you know, in 50 states and shit. Like... And so he comes out the car confused as fuck. Mm-hmm. And they're like, here's 20 commands in the space of 3 seconds. Figure shit out. Mm-hmm. While you have a gun pointed to your head. He couldn't, like most of us couldn't, you know, because that's the nature of that situation. And so they shot his ass dead. After the fact, even though no eyewitnesses saw it, no cameras caught it, they said there was a magical gun that descended upon him and feared for their lives. And I'm sure they'll get off.
Well, a peaceful rally in response to the shooting turned violent on Wednesday as protesters threw rocks and bottles at the police and riot gear. One protester was shot and gravely wounded. The official reports are saying he was shot. The protester, I don't know if it was a male or female, was shot and gravely wounded by a civilian. Other people who were on the ground said that it was by the cop, and the cops then threw tear gas immediately in order to blur the vision so that people couldn't see what actually happened.
Right, right. So people that were there are like, y'all, you just shot us. I mean, like, does that even really make any sense? You such an angry mob of protesters. Where are you going to point your motherfucking gun? At another protester? Says who? What I did saw and what there is video of in mm-hmm. Charlotte during the protest is a white man driving in his car through the protests with a gun. He has his left hand out of the driver's side window, mm-hmm. a gun clearly visible, pointing this gun at the protesters, and police let him drive off and go away.
It is possible, though, that a civilian would have killed a protester.
Have shown in their actions is that white people can roll up to these protests with guns, agitating, pointing them at people, even possibly shoot another protester in, you know, like 2 feet in front of police and walk away, no questions asked. Because all police are interested is brutalizing peaceful protesters.
Speaking of which, at Eastern Michigan University, a truck plowed through a Black Lives Matter protest. It is unclear, the last update I read, if someone was actually injured, but they got tired of waiting and plowed through with a big truck. there's video footage of it. But it's like those guys who...
Fared for his life.
It's just like those guys who were in St. Louis with their assault rifles. What were they called? I can't remember. But yeah, they came out in great numbers with their assault rifles, and the police didn't look bat an eye at them.
Mm-hmm. If you white, you can do what you want. You got Second Amendment rights. If you black, you got a book, and it kind of looked... Your book better be neon motherfucking green, bitch. Like... You know, put a jacket on that beast. You better get a Kindle. Like,
you know,
your shit could be a gun.
So a video circulated already back with Alton and Philando, and it's circulating again by a great comedian where she describes she wants to call in black, meaning rather than calling in sick, you call in black when all these videos circulate, because you can't. You can't even keep yourself from watching it if you are online, because videos just automatically play these days, no matter if you're on a news site or on Facebook. So if people are traumatized, what should they do? What if people are tired of watching videos?
Okay, so Stacey Patton, mm-hmm. who many, I'm a fan, to be honest, and I consider her an acquaintance/friend. I really like her, posted yesterday a very controversial statement about how we should be feeling at this time. She says, and I quote, "Why are y'all so tired? Were you driving to Charlotte or Tulsa all night? Were you in the streets protesting? Were you shutting down a highway or dodging tear gas? Were you up all night comforting your murdered loved ones' crying children? Were you planning their funeral? Were you up laying out plans for radical acts of collective self-defense for our people? Did you stay up late working on some report that will change policies? You can't be a revolutionary when merely watching the television and scrolling through Facebook beats you down to the point where you're so tired. We are alive today because somebody did the exhausting work of surviving the Middle Passage. Somebody endured the horrors of the plantation. Somebody escaped a lynching. Somebody survived a race riot. Somebody marched. Somebody fought in measurable ways. They didn't sweat, bleed, and sacrifice so we can sit on our asses and complain about how tired we are."
That's a long quote.
Okay. So she wrote that. And, you know, there was a chorus of amens. But then right after that, mm-hmm. there was a lot of backlash from people saying, look, you know, this is ableist. This is classist. This is problematic. Not everyone has the ability to get to a Charlotte or a Tulsa. Mm-hmm. You know, not when you're working at the Walmart on an extended shift. You know, not everybody has the wherewithal to write a policy that will change things. Mm-hmm. Not everybody has the emotional or physical capacity to do the kind of work that you're talking about, and the pressures to do said work, and that we all need to be like these revolutionaries that are doing it all really well, is part of what causes increased stress and anxiety in people that researchers have said actually have a measurable effect on the shortening of our life, that trauma in Black folks is generational, it's hereditary, and it's very real in the current moment, and that it costs us with years on our lives. So that has been the backlash to what she has said. And other people have come through with offering some measurable ways that people can care for themselves. I've had people do videos where they're meditating and trying to encourage people to breathe with them. I've had people reshare different articles where they're giving self-help, self-care tips about what you can do when you feel overwhelmed or very traumatized or in a lot of pain from seeing all of the brutality. But it's a very real thing, and it costs you time. You know, if you have kids like I do, you have to talk to your kids about it. That costs you time. And then you got to be mind blown about it. That costs you time. You got to figure out how you're going to move in your work and your body and act like, you know, nothing happens. You know, we have jobs where I don't get no time off of this. You know, that you have to push it down and deal with it at a time when you can't. And there is no time to deal with it. Mm-hmm. So while I do get what Stacey was trying to put forward, that there's work to be done here, right? I think that the way that it was delivered really felt for people like, whoa, but we know there's work to be done here. And the things that you're saying are also a source of stress.
Absolutely.
About,
And Dorea Netta also released a new report this week. I don't know if that was by coincidence, if they had already planned on releasing it, or if they, you know, pushed the release date due to what has been going on. In their report, they identified 8 types of use of force policies that restrict how and when police use force. They range from banning officers from using chokeholds and strangleholds to requiring police to use de-escalation tactics. And they write that according to their analysis, all 8 policies were associated with fewer police-involved killings. And the departments that implement all of these policies would potentially reduce killings by 72% compared to departments that have none of these policies in place. I will be sure to post the link so that you can read it yourself. But they do have language. They propose specific language that civilians, activists, and whoever else cares can use by sending it to their police departments and demanding that it be adopted. And in our third segment, what are we looking forward to? What are we excited about? I'm throwing a pre-Afropunk warm-up with brunch and mimosas and, of course, non-alcoholic beverages. Tonight, we're going to a kind of like a kickoff party for Afropunk that they write specifically is for the queer Black folks come out and enjoy themselves. We'll see, though. Not so many people are hyped about Afropunk. We'll see how they pull it off. We'll obviously...
And remember, we were early adopters, got those tickets on first announce, mm-hmm. and then they ended up discounting the tickets.
Yes, that was ugly, and did that through Black Pride, of all things. Yes. So the word on the street is they had the option to go with a few different venues, mm-hmm. and they decided on Alley Pally. The issue with that is it's a very large venue, so mm-hmm. it is hard to fill. Mm-hmm. And because of whatever their negotiations were, it is what it is. So fill tickets to be had. If you want to join us, join us. We'll be periscoping and Instagramming all weekend to show you all of the Black excellence on display and in exchange. What I'm excited about is the fact that I went to three Alvin Ailey performances over the last week and a half. Alvin Ailey is touring the UK right now. The dance company is just left me speechless every night. They had 4 different programs. I was able to make it to 3 of the programs, and every program, of course, ended with their most well-known piece, Revelations. I tell you, there is nothing like an Alvin Ailey evening in the theater. What about you, Denise? What are you excited about? What are you looking forward to?
Well, here in, as many of you know, there's a group here called Black People in Vienna, and that's been going strong. We finally found a Black-owned restaurant to have our monthly mixer in. And we're starting a specific brunch, monthly brunch for Black women. So I'm excited about that. That starts in October, first Saturday of the month.
And how can people find out about it if they're in Vienna or coming through?
So since the Black People in Vienna only existed as a Facebook group, we now are on meetup.com. So just go to meetup.com and punch in Black People in Vienna, mm-hmm. and you can contact us there.
Amazing. And so is the Black Women's Brunch, is that for all Black women, or do you have to be a member of the Black People in Vienna?
All Black women that happen to be in Vienna on October 1st can come.
Awesome. Have you heard about, did you read the reviews for, I just have to bring it up. Did you read the reviews now for the people who've watched a first couple of episodes of Luke Cage?
Ooh, somebody did that?
Yes.
They had
the access to it.
What level, like, what do I need to do to be down?
That's what I said. I was like, how you get the hookup? I don't know. Yes. And they were like, it's so
flawless. I need to activate my network on this. this is treachery. I don't see it. Okay. I don't know. Nobody talks to me anymore, apparently. So I've been betrayed, but I have seen the first 2 episodes of Atlanta.
How did you like it, being someone who never lived in Atlanta?
You know what?
Now I'm asking because I've heard some mixed reviews. All of the Atlanteans love it.
Okay. All right. So I loved it.
Yay. Oh,
my goodness. I loved it because, and one of the things I loved about it is that a lot of time with protagonists, they try to paint themselves in a purely sympathetic light. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, here is my ass, y'all. Like, this right here.
No, that's great.
So that right there, it was very, very real. And the jail scenes,
Oh, no spoilers now. No spoilers. Yeah. Oh, speaking of Atlanta. Oh, how could I forget? Speaking of Atlanta, RIP Shoddy Lowe. Shoddy Lowe has passed away. He was a true buckhead. Down. Beefed with T.I. forever and a day, but they got their beef together, thankfully, before he passed away. RIP Shoddy Lowe.
And he is survived by 11 children. His 11 children and his family.
Why must you be so shady when I'm trying to be?
Nobody says any shady things.
I saw your face, though. Your face was revealing. You forget. This is a podcast, but I can see you. I can see you. Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And you can find us on Patreon, patreon.com/thequeertruth, if you'd like to donate. We'd appreciate it. Until next time, peace out.